The Victoria Police Force presents B-24. From the files of the Victoria Police, for the first time, come these true stories of unceasing war against crime, of day and night vigilance that protect our life and our property, and of the nerve center of the Police Information Bureau, D-24.
Now, you can't struggle anymore, can you?
No!
It's nearly over now. Just a little longer. You'll never breathe again.
This is the true story of the Strangler. This is a true story from the files of the Victoria Police. Only names, place names, and dates have been altered. Quite recently, we received a letter from a mother. In her letter, she said this.
I think you would have a large children's audience. I wish you could have a D-24 on these men that entice little girls away. We have one around our district which is causing a lot of concern. If D-24 had a case on their files, I'm sure the children would understand.
We can assure this mother that the police are giving that case all possible attention. But to meet her request, we ask the police for a story that might help children to understand why they should never talk to strangers. And never, never go anywhere with strangers, even if they offer money or sweets. Never go anywhere with strangers. Before we begin, let me just say this. We hope that this story will not awaken sad memories in the minds of any relatives or friends of the people concerned. Naturally, we don't wish to do that. And we feel sure that everyone will understand that we tell this story only because it may prevent a repetition of the tragedy and heartache that was so cruelly inflicted on so many homes and families. This is the story of four young girls, whom we shall call Mary, Phyllis, Catherine, and Brenda. Today, these girls should be healthy, happy young women. But all of them are dead. The first little girl was Mary. She was 9 years old and lived at Caulfield. And one afternoon after school, she was playing happily with some of her friends.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Coming, ready or not?
Hello, little girl.
Oh.
What are you doing?
Playing hardy. I'm he.
Huh? How do you play that?
Don't you know how to play hardy?
No, I don't. Tell me about it, will you?
Oh, I can't. I've got to find the others. They're hiding from me.
Why?
'Cause that's the game. I shut my eyes and they all hide while I count to 10.
That sounds a nice game.
Yes, it's fun.
Can I play too?
No, grown-ups don't play hidey.
Why not?
'Cause they don't, that's all. I'll have to find the others now. Goodbye.
Can I watch?
I suppose so.
All right. I'll see you when you find them. Yes, I did. You're very clever at hiding, aren't you?
Oh, it's easy.
What do you do now?
Well, Jennifer's he now. She has to close her eyes and count to 10 while we all hide.
Wouldn't you rather have some lollies?
Have you got some lollies?
No, but I know where I can get some.
At Mrs. Bennett's shop.
I know somewhere better than that.
Where?
You come with me and I'll show you.
Well, there be enough lollies for the other kids, too?
Yes, of course there will.
Oh, well, I better tell my little sister first.
What are you going to tell her?
That we're going to buy some lollies.
All right. But be quick, won't you?
Yes!
And I'll wait for you here.
And so, while the other little girls went on with the game, Mary accompanied the man in search of lollies. She was a friendly child and saw nothing wrong in what she was doing. Nor did she see anything wrong in riding on a tram with the men. And finally, in going into an empty house with him. She was too young to know. But half an hour later, Mary was dead. Mary died because she was too trusting. Because in her natural love for lollies, she forgot what her parents had often told her. Never speak to strange men. Never, never go anywhere with them. Then there was Phyllis. Phyllis was 16, just beginning to take an interest in life. One night, just 2 months after the dreadful murder of Mary, Phyllis was walking along a street near her home in Hawkesburn.
Excuse me.
Hey?
Do you know where Johnson Street is?
No, sorry.
Hey, just a minute.
I'm in a hurry.
Look, I won't keep you a minute.
All right, what is it?
I don't know this part too well, and I've got to find Johnson Street.
I told you. I don't know where it is.
Don't you live around here?
What if I do?
Oh, it's just that I thought you'd know the streets.
Are you sure it's Johnson Street?
Pretty sure of it.
Well, I don't know it.
Ah. Oh, well, can't be helped. Have a cigarette.
What's the big idea?
Just thought you might like one, that's all.
You're a funny sort.
No, I'm not. Just a bit lonely.
Haven't you got any friends?
Not many. Are you really in a hurry? Or did you just say that?
I just said it.
Oh. Have a cigarette and talk to me for a while, will you?
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
What's your name?
Phyllis. What's yours?
Bert. Do you like dancing?
Love it.
Would you come to a dance with me if I asked you?
You've got a nerve, haven't you?
Oh, I don't think so. I like the look of you, though.
Thanks.
I'm not really such a bad type, you know.
That's what you say.
Oh, I'm not. So, what about that dance?
You mean right now? Oh, don't be silly.
Well, tomorrow night, then.
Oh, I don't go dancing with anyone.
But we know each other now.
Do we?
Oh, cut it out, Phyllis. Give a man a go.
You're a trier, I'll say that much for you.
And what about it?
Oh, I'll sleep on it. Call me up tomorrow. Night, Bert.
Hey, wait a bit. Where do I get you?
You don't.
Oh, fair go. You can't do this to me.
No? You watch me.
Just a minute.
Oh, don't you dare touch me.
Yes, I will.
I'll go out.
If you do, I'll pretty soon fix you.
No.
You've led me on, you have. You made me believe it.
I made you believe nothing.
Yes, you did. I thought you'd come dancing with me.
I'd rather die first.
Would you?
No. No, I didn't mean that.
What did you mean, then?
Nothing.
No?
I don't know. Go away, will you? Leave me alone.
No. You're gonna be my girl.
No.
Yes, you are. Come here.
No. Get out. No.
What's the use of struggling? I'm too strong for you.
Let me go.
I'm never gonna let you go. Never.
Your hands. My throat.
I'll never let you go. Now. Can't struggle anymore, can you? It's nearly over now. Just a little longer, it'll be over.
Sixteen-year-old Phyllis had made the mistake of stopping to talk to a strange man at night. She was not to know that he was a vicious killer, that he'd already killed once. and that she was to be only the second of his four victims. Phyllis's body was found the next morning, a few yards from where the murderer had relentlessly pressed his fingers against her throat. And then there was Catherine. 12 years old Catherine, who lived in the country. It was exactly midnight on the 31st of December, 1934.
Oh, it's 12 o'clock. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year. And an especially Happy New Year to you, Dad.
Happy New Year, darling.
Come on, everyone.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot in the days of old anxiety? Oh,
Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year.
Mummy, Mummy.
Catherine, what are you doing up at this time of night?
I wanted to say Happy New Year to you and Daddy.
And I thought you were sound asleep.
You're not cross with me for getting up, are you, Mummy?
No, of course I'm not. A very, very happy new year to you, my darling.
Oh, happy new year, Mummy. Happy new year, Daddy.
Happy new year, Kathy.
And now you better hurry back to bed, darling.
Oh, Mummy.
You don't want to be tired for the picnic at Mornington tomorrow, do you?
Oh, I won't be tired.
Yes, you will if you don't hurry. You've got a long day in front of you.
Oh, it'll be fun tomorrow, won't it?
I'm sure you'll have a lovely time, darling. There'll be games and races.
Well, I'm not going to have any breakfast tomorrow, so I'll have room for thousands of ice creams.
Oh, you and your ice creams. But you won't enjoy yourself if you're tired. So run back to bed, my pet.
Will you come and tuck me in, Mummy?
Yes, dear, in a few minutes.
What time do I have to get up?
At 7 o'clock, because Mr. and Mrs. Fleming will be here to pick you up at 8 sharp.
So 12-year-old Catherine went gaily back to bed to dream of the New Year's Day picnic. In a few moments, we'll continue this true story from the files of the Victoria Police. This is a true story from the files of the Victoria Police. Only names, place names, and dates have been altered. At 8 o'clock sharp on New Year's Day, 12-year-old Catherine was picked up in a car by Mr. and Mrs. Fleming and their three children, Frank, Arthur, and Nancy. It was a gay party that drove to Mornington, and when they arrived there, they had a wonderful time. A picnic lunch among the tea tree, swimming in the calm waters of the bay, and joining in the beach sports and games. And then at about 4:30...
Now, boys and girls, the next event is the Greasy Barrel. Will all those who want to enter please give their names to the stewards? Come on, boys and girls, there's lots of fun and wonderful prizes. So let's have your names for the Greasy Barrel event. Come on, boys and girls, the Greasy Barrel event.
Are we going to watch the Greasy Barrel, Nancy?
I don't want him much. I'd rather buy another ice cream.
Oh, me too. Have you got any money left?
Not much. Have you?
Tenpence.
I've got a shilling, I think.
Oh, that's enough. Come on, then. Let's go round to the shop.
Look at all that crowd in the shop.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Let's go in.
All right.
Oh, we'll never get served.
No.
I tell you what, you go down that end of the counter and I'll go this end. We'll have a race to see who gets served first.
I bet I'll win.
I'll bet I do.
All right. I'll see you at the door.
All right, then.
I knew I'd get here first. Oh, hello, Mummy.
Where's Catherine, dear?
In the shop, buying an ice cream. Look, they're beaut big ones, aren't they?
I hope you girls aren't eating too many of them.
Oh, Mummy, we've only had about 6 each all day.
6? Then that must be the last. What will Catherine's mother say if I take her home with a bilious attack?
She told me she had 10 ice creams one day.
Well, she's not having 10 today, and neither are you.
All right, Mummy.
So as soon as Catherine comes out of the shop, both of you hurry back to the car.
Where are you going?
To get some milk. I'll expect to see both of you at the car in about 10 minutes. Nancy, wherever have you been? It's over half an hour since I spoke to you at the sweet shop. And where's Catherine?
I've been waiting for her outside the shop. I thought she must have come back here by now. Isn't she here?
No, she's not. I do wish she'd hurry. It's nearly time for tea. You'd better see if you can find her, dear.
All right, Mummy.
And when you do, don't dawdle back. Tea will be all ready. Are you sure you looked everywhere, Nancy?
Yes, Mummy, and I couldn't see a sign of her.
Oh, dear, this is really too bad.
Yeah, what's the trouble, Frieda?
It's Catherine, Dad. She got separated from Nancy, and she hasn't come back for tea.
Oh, she'll turn up all right.
I do hope nothing's happened to her.
Well, what could happen with all these people around?
Oh, I don't know, but I just feel worried, that's all. Do see if you can find her, will you? Take Nancy with you.
All right, but stop worrying. Come on, Nancy. Let's get Arthur and Frank, and we'll have Catherine back in no time.
But Catherine was nowhere to be found. And as the sun went down, it became obvious that something serious had happened to Catherine. The Flemings summoned police assistance. And Senior Constable Stevens called for volunteer searches.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to interrupt your dancing, but a little girl has been lost. I'm calling for volunteers to help us in our search.
Church bells, too, rang out their peals for help. But Catherine had disappeared. Throughout the night and into the dawn, the search went on. Then, at about 9:30 in the morning, a party of searchers was making its way through the scrub.
You and Frank go along that track, Bill. We'll go along here.
Hey, look at that.
Huh?
Lying there, near the track. It's the little girl. Yes. And she's been murdered.
Yes, Catherine was dead. As in the cases of Mary and Phyllis, the police did everything possible to trace the murderer, but he'd left no clues. There was a similarity between the deaths of the three girls that suggested one man was responsible for them all. But this was not to be proved until nearly a year later. And before that, another little girl had to die. Seven years old, Brenda. It was Sunday afternoon, and Brenda had been playing with her young friends. But now she was alone, walking along the footpath, when she saw a familiar figure riding towards her on a bicycle.
Hello, Brenda.
Hello.
Where are you going?
Nowhere special. Who are you?
Just riding around. Would you like a ride?
Oh, yes, please.
All right. Up on the bar.
Thank you.
That's the idea. Now, where'd you like to go?
I don't care.
You don't, eh?
No.
All right. We'll go down this way. Phew. That was a good ride, wasn't it?
Yes, good-o. But I better go home now.
You can walk home from here, can't you?
I suppose so. Thank you for the ride. Goodbye.
Hey, Brenda?
Yes?
Just a minute. I want you.
What do you want? Why are you looking so funny? What's the matter with you? Mummy! Mummy!
Shut up! I've got to do it. I can't help myself. I've got to do it.
And so those powerful hands claimed yet another victim. 7 years old Brenda. But this time the murderer decided he should have an alibi. And so he called at a dairy farm.
Good day, Tom.
How you going, Bert? What brings you around here?
I just wondering if you had a copy of yesterday's paper.
Don't think so. I'll have a look.
As a matter of fact, I've been waiting for you for a quarter of an hour.
Why didn't you come down to the milking sheds?
Thought you must be out.
But you know I'm always milking at this time.
Must have forgotten.
Well, that's not like you.
Well, I did, that's all.
Huh. Okay. Oh, I'm not trying to pick a fight.
Well, have you got a paper or haven't you?
Come inside now. Have a look.
And so, with his story of waiting quarter of an hour, the man Bert believed he'd established an alibi. It was not until the next morning that Brenda was found. The discovery of her body caused a sensation. And although Constable Wilkinson, who hurried to investigate, could find no clues, his inquiries brought out some useful information.
I saw a man dinking a girl that looked like Brenda on his bicycle.
I saw Brenda talking to a man who had a black bicycle.
I saw Bert Stanfield riding a black bicycle down near the playground.
I saw Bert Stanfield riding along with a queer look on his face.
A black bicycle.
A man had a girl with him.
Bert Stanfield.
Bert Stanfield.
Bert Stanfield.
Meanwhile, detectives from Melbourne drove quickly to the scene of the crime. And after hearing the constable's report, brought Bert Stanfield in for questioning.
We're making inquiries into the death of Brenda Power, Bert. Will you tell us what you were doing on Sunday evening?
What part of Sunday evening?
Oh, from about 5 o'clock onwards.
Let me think now. Well, about 5 o'clock, I was talking to a mate outside the pub.
And what's your mate's name?
Bill Thomas.
Yes. And how long were you talking to him?
A fair while. After I left him, I went straight home for tea.
At what time?
About 6.
Did you stay home for the rest of the night?
No. About 7 o'clock, I took my bike and rode over to Burke's place. They weren't home.
How do you know?
Well, I knocked, of course.
What if the Burkes say they were home all the evening?
Couldn't have been.
Constable Wilkinson tells me they were.
Then they couldn't have heard me knock.
All right. What did you do when you decided the Burkes weren't at home?
Rode around to Tom Forbes' place.
What time did you get there?
About 7:10.
10 past?
Yeah. But I didn't see Tom until about 25 past.
Oh? Why not?
He wasn't in at first. At least I thought he wasn't. But after I'd waited a while, he came up from the milking shed.
You're sure of the time, are you?
Yes, I am.
Bert, Constable Wilkinson had a talk to Tom Forbes.
Well?
Forbes said he didn't finish milking until 7:55.
He's wrong. It was 7:25.
Forbes says he takes almost exactly the same time over his milking. And he always glances at the kitchen clock when he gets back to the house.
It was 7:25.
Let me have a look at your watch, Bert.
I haven't got one.
Oh? Is it broken?
Well, I never use one.
Then how are you so sure of the times of your movements on Sunday?
I am, that's all.
Bert, I'm not satisfied with your explanation of your movements between 7 o'clock and 7:55.
Well, I've told you the lot.
Several people say they saw you riding near the playground at about 7:15.
I wasn't near the playground at all on Sunday.
And at about the same time, a man answering your description and riding a bicycle the same color as yours was seen in Benson Street.
Well, it wasn't in Benson Street either.
That's all you've got to say?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but... but your story of going to the Burks and thinking they were out when they were all home, and then going to Tom Forbes' place half an hour earlier than he says you were there, and your denial of riding near the playground when several witnesses say they saw you, just doesn't add up. Don't you realize that?
What do you want me to say?
I'm asking you if you know anything about the death of Brenda Parr.
Not much use telling any more lies, is it? All right. I do know about it. All about it. I killed her. And now you know that, you may as well know about the others.
The others?
Yeah. Three of them. Mary Roberts, Phyllis Burton, and Catherine Long. I killed them all.
Bert Stanfield had killed once too often. He was eventually found guilty of murder and hanged at Pentridge Jail. But his hanging can never make up for the sorrow he brought to four homes. Can never bring back to life four girls who should be living today. We can only hope that every child who's listened to this story will learn a lesson from it and will remember never, never to speak to strange men. Never to go anywhere with them, whatever money or sweets or promises they offer. The risk is far too great. And even if you do know the man who asks you to go somewhere with him, as poor little Brenda Power did, always ask your parents' permission first. Only then can you be sure you're safe. And finally, may I once again remind everyone everywhere to always cooperate with your police force whenever and wherever possible. Report anything even slightly suspicious immediately. Only names, place names, and dates were altered in this true story. It was dramatized from the files of the Victoria Police by Roland Strong, who now says goodbye until the same time next week, when there'll be another true story in this series, D24, which is brought to you by the Victoria Police Force and produced in the studios of Hector Crawford Productions by Dorothy Crawford.